Hi, friends. How are you today?
My name is Bailey Sarian, and today is Monday, which means it's murder, mystery, and makeup Monday.
If you're new here, hi. My name is Bailey Sarian, and on Mondays, I like to sit down and talk about a true crime story that's been heavy on my noggin, and I do my makeup at the same time. It just kind of like gives me something to do so I'm not being weird just staring at the camera. It's really nothing more than that. Keeping my hands busy. If you're into true crime and you like makeup, I would say subscribe because I'm here for you on Mondays. I don't even know where to start with today's story because I have been following this one since the beginning and I watched the trial and everything and I was just watching in complete confusion, disbelief, and wonder because what? I was like, is this real? Is this like a skit? It wasn't a skit. It was real life and I need to talk about it. So that's what today's story is about. I have no words. Oh, I have no words because this, today's story is really brutal. It's really gruesome. So just a little disclaimer. It's brute. Okay, so today's story takes place in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Yeah, Green Bay. Now, Green Bay is famous for their football team, the Packers, and also cheese. I mean, there are a lot of like little charming neighborhoods way up in the North Country. But low-key, you know, just kind of like a lot of other places in America, everyone is kind of heavily into drugs. I mean, not everyone, but, you know, sadly, there's a very serious drug underbelly up in Green Bay, like many other places, right? They're fucking everywhere. And it seems like their drug of choice seems to be meth. So that's the setting. And buckle up because we're going to ride the snake. We're gonna get down to some show business. Here we go. Okay, so it's 3 a.m., February 23rd, 2022. Green Bay 911 gets a phone call from a very confused man. Now, this man's name is Steve. Now, on the phone call, he seems kind of calm, a little slow since he had just woken up, so kind of like brain foggy. But he's calling 911 because his girlfriend, whose name is Tara, is absolutely losing it. She is in the back. You can hear her on the 911 call. She's hysterical. She's screaming. She's crying. She woke him up screaming, telling him to call 911. So Steve's on the phone kind of like, she just told me to call. You know, like he doesn't fully understand what's going on yet. So the dispatcher's on the phone asking him like, what's going on, right? What's going on? Tell me what's going on. And he tells them, my girl just woke me up and she swears that she found a severed head of her son in the basement. The dispatcher asked Steve to repeat himself. I mean, hello, it's not really common that a head in a bucket is found, you know? So the dispatcher is like, I'm sorry, come again? What was that? And the dispatcher then asked Steve if he's gone down to the basement to confirm that there is, in fact, a head in a bucket. And Steve says back to the dispatcher, like, I don't know what the fuck's down there. Like, pardon my language, but I'm kind of a little freaked out here, which honestly, very understandable. Now the dispatcher continues to ask Steve, like, maybe is your girlfriend Tara maybe like hallucinating? Like, we need confirmation here, Steve. So Steve does decide to go down to the basement and check it out, but his eyesight is apparently really bad and like there isn't the best lighting down there. So he can't exactly make out like what's down there or in the bucket, but he goes down there, he checks out and he's freaked out. So Steve goes back to his girlfriend and is like, please, can you just come downstairs and like confirm? Because I don't know what you're seeing. But Tara just refuses to go downstairs. Fair. I can't blame them. If it is her son's head in a bucket, I don't think I would want to go back there downstairs and look by myself alone either. Actually, yeah, that's a terrible idea. I don't know what I would do. I've never seen a head, let alone my non-existing son's head. So then the dispatcher is like, okay, can I speak to Tara directly? Then they ask her, do you know where the rest of your son's body is? And she answers like, I have no idea. I just saw a fucking head. Can you get over here? So the dispatcher asks her for her son's name. And then that's when Tara tells him it's Shad Therian. And the dispatcher tells Tara that they're gonna send officers out to her immediately. They were already on their way. But she does check one last time about the head. The dispatcher. And she says, like, are you sure it's not a fake head? And Tara says, it's real, swear. So within minutes, the police, they get down to Tara's house. She answers the door. Now she's really shaken up. So when police ask her to come in and like see what's going on, all Tara can do is really just point in the direction of the basement. Like, she's not really able to say anything. Nothing leaves her mouth. I mean, it's her kid, for Christ's sakes. I don't really blame her. It's funny how they always want you to act normal on these 911 calls and stuff. And you're like, just saw a head. Kind of hard to act natural and normal here, ma'am. So one of the officers that shows up, his name is Officer Alex Wanish. He goes down and he takes a quick glance around the room. And right away, he can tell, like, it's a crime scene, no question. When he looks around the room, he sees dried blood all over a bare mattress. And not far from this bare mattress covered in fucking blood was a black bucket that was on the floor, and it was covered by a beach towel. But nobody was going to the beach, you know what I'm saying? So Officer Wanish, obviously head in the bucket, he hesitates a little bit, but he lifts the towel and sees it's a head in a bucket. So then he quickly calls for backup.
10-4, got a head in a bucket. Over.
Then the officer, he goes up to Tara and he's like, can I please get a picture of your son? I just want to be able to confirm that it is indeed his head in the bucket. So she gives him the picture and he goes downstairs and he confirms that it is indeed Shad, Tara's son, Shad's head. He's like looking in this bucket, and then he also finds right underneath, or like next to the severed head, there was also penis in the bucket with two testicles still attached. Huh? Yeah. So the officer is looking around the room. You know, it's a crime scene now. And that's where he notices that the blood wasn't just on the mattress. There were also like swishes of blood on the concrete floor. It looked like swirled finger paint, but it really looked like somebody kind of had like a towel and was trying to like clean up the blood, but then they gave up. They're like, meh. So the killer must have been like a little bit lazy. So the officer, he's searching around the room, and while he's looking around, he finds two different blood-soaked knives, and immediately he's thinking like, okay, these are probably the murder weapons, but they were not the only murder weapons lying around. Officer Wanish finds a plastic bag with three more bloody knives. Inside the plastic bag, one of those knives was like a bread knife, and then there were like other kitchen knives with it. So it was like either one or maybe all of these knives had been the murder weapon to kill Shad, you know? Many more bags were found in the basement. And within these bags, there were various body parts and organs that once belonged to Shad inside of them. I mean, it wasn't just Shad's head and genitals that were found. It was so much more. There was like this big blue storage container. And Officer Wanish finds Shad's upper torso inside of it. And to make matters worse, it's like inside of his upper torso. Upper torso in the container. Inside of the upper torso, gift within a gift, so as in Shad's chest, there was his foot. His foot was put in the, Lord be with us, Jesus, what? Yes. Shad's chest was being used as storage, I guess, for his other parts. And below where his head was supposed to be, there were like these really stiff cuts. Like someone was trying really, really hard to use one of these kitchen knives to saw off his head, but like it wasn't working, and I don't know, but it was rough. Alongside in that blue container, there were also just various bodily fluids. It didn't say exactly what, but like it wasn't just blood. I think that says enough. So, okay, this officer, Officer W, I think it's one-ish. Officer W, he had pretty much walked into like a very brutal, very manic crime scene. Shad's body had been completely dismembered. Certain parts were missing. Certain parts seemed to be in the wrong place. So it was like, what the hell is going on, right? Within this murder room, there was a glass pipe that was found and like a gram of some kind of substance. It was noted a light colored powdered material within like a bag next to it. And this was just sitting like on the TV stand next to the bed. So to answer like, what the hell is going on? It seemed to be the answer is meth, you know? So at this point, it was confirmed Shad was murdered. And not only that, brutally murdered. Brutally murdered. So the officer asked Tara, you know, Shad's mom, like, who was the last person to see Shad? Who was the, who, what? And Tara tells him it was a friend of his, like a friend with benefits, you could say. And that was 25-year-old Taylor Shabusiness. I'm going to pause for that last name, Shabusiness. The things you could do with that last name. Shabusiness? Let's get down to Shabusiness. She could have been Shabusiness. Come on. I couldn't. I was like, Shabusiness? Huh? Shabusiness. Now, I know what you're thinking. Great name. We all thought it. Not her birth name. Not her birth name. I could go on and on for hours about the name Shabusiness, but I won't. She was born as Taylor Coronado in Evanston, Illinois on November 23rd, 1997. She's a Sag, but we're not claiming her. She's been removed. So what's up with Taylor? Let me tell you. Taylor had shitty life. Let's just be honest. Shit life. Thus far. She was raised by her parents, Marla, and her dad is Arturo Coronado. And she also had a younger brother named AJ. And although they weren't like a perfect family, you know, which every family is not, they were together and they lived a somewhat decent middle-class life, it was said. Taylor's dad, Arturo, he had been a longtime employee of a large phone company. I mean, back in the dinosaur times when cell phones were like brick phones. And he had been working for this company forever. So, you know, they did well. They were comfortable, stable, and from the outside looked somewhat good. It was said when Taylor got into fourth grade, Arturo, he got transferred to Green Bay, Wisconsin. And that's when he decided to move like the whole family to this new location, right? And put down their roots there. Her mother, Marla, was a severe alcoholic and like the kind of alcoholic that definitely could not make a super stable household. Marla was really sick. In May of 2009, when Taylor was 11, the whole family was like watching a movie together. Everything's fine and great. But by morning, you know, everyone went to bed, whatever. By morning, Arturo wakes up. He turns over to greet his wife. And in bed, that's when he finds her non-responsive, Marla. Yeah. So he reached out to touch her. And that's when he said that she was already cold. So Taylor's mom, Marla, she died of cirrhosis from alcoholism in her sleep at the age of only 41. It's so sad. So very young. Look, as a parent, like Arturo was like, duh, I'm just going to try and hide what happened because the kids have to go to school. So like in the morning, the kids came into their bedroom. It was Taylor and AJ and to say like good morning or something. But Arturo decided to shield them, the kids, from her lifeless body and like set them off to school. Like everything was normal. So they wouldn't see anything. And it was said like Taylor knew deep down that something was wrong, but she couldn't tell what. And it wasn't until like later that day when the kids came back from school and whatnot that the Arturo had like broken the news to them that, you know, their mom had died. Marla's death obviously like took a toll on the whole family. And it really hit Taylor the hardest. I mean, how could it not? It was her mom, you know? She was so young and she didn't know how to process her grief. And then on top of that, Arturo, Taylor's dad, he got married pretty quickly after her mother's death. So it's like a lot of change to go through, some trauma, right? That she really didn't get to process. So with all of that, as Taylor started growing up, you know, she started to act out, you can say, getting into trouble, having like some kind of rage attacks. It was different. It was a different girl, according to Arturo. It was said that Taylor, at school, she started to like pick fights with everybody. She was constantly getting in trouble for her behavioral issues. And her dad, obviously, he was concerned, but you know, she's a young girl. She lost her mom. She's just acting out. She's being a preteen slash teenager. Like he tried his best, but he felt like there wasn't much he could do because she was just a teenager, which is like, okay, fair, but I don't know. But when Taylor turned 12 years old, Arturo, her dad, he had found her trying to end her life. And I guess she had taken like a knife to her throat. And when he found her, it was just in time to like stop her. And at that point, that's when her dad was like, okay, she needs help. She needs real help. So he immediately got her seen by a doctor, you know, for mental health. He took her to a mental health professional in hopes that she could get some kind of real help that he didn't know how to deal with. Unclear if Taylor received actual treatment or if she just saw a doctor, but either way, she was mainly treated with drugs. She was getting medication for like ADHD. She was getting mood stabilizers, antipsychotics, and even antidepressants as well. Even with all the heavy medications Taylor was on to help her manage her mental health, it wasn't getting to the root of the problem, you know? So it still continued on. Up through high school, Taylor was constantly picking fights and I guess just being a menace, really, is how it sounded. Up through high school, Taylor, she just kept picking fights. She kept being awful, but she did meet a nice young man and get a boyfriend named Shad. Yes, this is when she meets Shad. So both of them are kind of just up to no good, being misfits. And after enduring years of behavioral problems, her school just had enough. And they decided it was best to expel Taylor. Now, at this point, Arturo, her dad, had no idea, like, what to do with her anymore, right? She's acting out. He's trying his best. So he thought the best thing to do with her would be to send her off to Texas to live with her grandparents. And, like, that's where she would end up finishing school, high school. And she could just kind of get away from her Green Bay issues or whatever was going on back at home. And it was a really good move because Taylor, she ends up graduating high school in Texas. She gets her diploma, and then after graduation, she turns 18. She's feeling good and kind of proud of herself or something. I don't know how she's feeling, but it was said she thought she was doing great and decided it'd be best to just go off of her medications, which is very dangerous because a lot of times the medications will make you feel better. You think you're doing better, then you stop taking the medications because you're like, I don't need them anymore because they're working and I feel great. And then they go off and that's not great. So then in 2017, Taylor is now 19. She thinks it'd be best to move back to Green Bay. She's fully off her medications. She's feeling good and she's ready for her triumphant return to Green Bay. At this point, it was said that Taylor had been self-medicating with like weed, typical kind of like teenage stuff, and also alcohol. But then she started to experiment a little bit with something that she called the bitch. And you're probably wondering, well, what's the bitch? Well, the quote unquote, the bitch is actually, it's meth. The bitch is meth. Yeah, I know, a jump. She went from weed and alcohol to meth. I was like, wow, usually there's an in-between, but okay, yeah. Straight to meth, all right. It was actually, quote, unquote, the bitch who introduced Taylor to the man that she would go on to marry, her drug dealer, Warren Chabot. Warren, dream man, he's in his 20s, he's tall, okay, he has a job. So Taylor's like, wow, all of the bases are covered. Dream man. And Taylor was smitten. She falls hard for Warren. And the two quickly become like they're inseparable, you know? Plus a 2-for-1 for her. She's like, I got my drug dealer and a lover / husband. All right, I'm doing good. So their relationship was pretty rough right from the beginning. I mean, plus on top of that, they're doing meth. So it's like, it's not going to be the smoothest relationship, right? Between the two of them, they were always making accusations about somebody cheating. You know, they're like, you're cheating. No, you're cheating. Just messy. Allegedly, like Warren was very controlling of Taylor right from the start. And he started to isolate her from the family. And Taylor once said that like during a meth-fueled fight, she had run to like her neighbor's house to call 911 for help. But, you know, despite all of this, Taylor and Warren, the two of them got married in 2019. Oh, great. Just what they should do is get married. But here's the thing. Instead of changing her last name to Warren's last name, which was Chabot, Warren has Taylor change her last name to Shabusiness. I guess it was Warren's idea. And she was like, okay, let's do it. And she did. Shabusiness. Meth. I don't know. Now, meth, a lot of the times, is kind of the, you know, it's kind of a joke. Sort of meth, right? Some people talk about meth users as being just erratic and crazy and all that stuff, but they're some of the most erratic drug users of all time. It can make people absolutely just lose their minds and their teeth fall out. They pick at their skin. I mean, it's awful from what I hear. I'm not a dumbass. I don't plan on it. But it's actually, it's more than that. It's like hugely heartbreaking. And it's almost an impossible addiction to break. When a person's on meth, they can experience hallucinations, paranoia. They can exhibit symptoms of what looks like schizophrenia. I mean, the list goes on. But what I'm getting at is that meth really fucks you up, okay? And then long term, meth actually changes the literal shape of your brain. It rewires your brain's dopamine system, which is like the pleasure system, so that the only thing that makes you feel good is meth, and only meth. So it's like, it's a demon, and it truly is a bitch. It's just not something people can just stop easily on their own, you know, like, sad. Hopefully you don't do meth. In July of 2020, Taylor was high on meth, and she was running around a Green Bay neighborhood, just like knocking on people's doors. She's like, come on, come. She's knocking on people's doors, and someone calls the cops, obviously, right? Because this chick is just acting kind of crazy. Officers, they find Taylor on the streets, and that's when she tells them that, quote, she's on a different planet right now, end quote. Sick. And she ends up showing the officers her fresh track marks on her arms from her meth use. So at least they knew kind of like what they were working with, I guess. I don't know. But they knew what they were working with. So they end up managing to calm Taylor down. But then another police officer shows up to the scene and she's getting all spooked and kind of like scared. So she starts screaming at the officers. She walks into oncoming traffic. She's popping off and she's just acting erratic. Okay. So the officer, they try to get her to come back to like the sidewalk, you know, so she's not in traffic, but this time she's getting really angry and she starts to kick them. And then they place her under arrest and they also charge her with resisting arrest and battery on law enforcement because she was like kicking and screaming at the officers. And because it was her first felony, she only got 3 years probation and a mandatory psychological evaluation. I know, they're like, it's your first felony. No more than a month later, in August of 2020. Mind you, this was like peak pandemic, by the way. Remember? Yeah, none of us remember because it's been a blur. But what's Miss Taylor up to? Well, she ends up getting pulled over. She's driving. Woo, woo, you know? So she's like supposed to pull over, but instead, she forced it. I guess she needed to handle some shabusiness. Thank you. Thank you. I had to do one. Okay, so she ends up flooring it. And I guess she ends up sending police like on a high-speed chase through Green Bay. She runs a bunch of lights, almost hits a bunch of people. She ends up pulling into her dad's apartment complex where she then like hops out of the car. Tries to make a run for it like an idiot. She gets out of the car. She's running. She's trying to get to her dad's apartment for some reason. Like she thinks she's really gonna like escape the police. But they end up snatching her, arrest her. She only gets 3 months in jail and 2 more years of probation. I just feel like after this, maybe you'd spend longer in jail. Not 3 months, but what do I know? I don't know anything. I just know our legal system is dumb as shit. I think we can all agree she's off to a pretty rocky start, right? And at this point in Taylor's life, she's like, you know what? You know what I haven't done yet? I haven't become a mother. Yeah, I know. What better time to become a mom than this? Great. This is going to go well. By the time Taylor is arrested in August of 2020, she's pregnant. And according to a friend, you know, she at this time when she was pregnant, she was still doing drugs. So she decides to end up moving back to her grandparents' house in Texas where she could try and live a clean life while she's pregnant. Meanwhile, Warren, her husband, I guess he had gone to jail because he got caught dealing meth. So without him around, I think that's when she decided to go back to her grandparents. I mean, it makes sense, right? He's a drug dealer, so he was doing his job and he got caught for it. So he was charged with possession with intent to distribute, a felony. So he gets sent off to federal prison, leaving Taylor to be a single mom. And good luck, girl, you know? Taylor got 2 felonies and barely had to serve any time. But he got caught and he had to serve a lot of time. So, all right, you know, all right, can't figure that one out.
In early 2021, Taylor ends up, she's 23 at this point. She delivers her baby boy and Taylor decides to give motherhood her best shot. During this time, she's also, you know, trying to keep her hands busy, trying to keep herself busy so she doesn't go back to using. She starts her own little small business where she's like selling custom beaded jewelry, and she's like selling it on Facebook. You know, she's just doing her thing. But for Taylor, it was still a daily struggle for her. Like, I guess, shortly after her son was born, Taylor had two suicide attempts back to back. One was in April of like 2021 and then another in May of 2021. Taylor wasn't officially diagnosed with postpartum, but after these two suicide attempts, Arturo, Taylor's father, knew that Taylor just, something wasn't right in her mind. And he was really worried about her trying to do it again. So he decides suggests that she should be admitted to a hospital, and she goes, and they give her a new set of diagnoses: PTSD, ADHD, and bipolar disorder. So at this time, Taylor's baby goes to live with Warren's side of the family, and it's probably for the best, hopefully, but she knows that she fully can't take care of him right now. Now, I know to most of us, it's like, okay, this is probably Taylor's rock bottom. She lost her son. Her husband is in federal prison. Her mental health is in the toilet. And this is probably where she'll make a comeback. But no. So she was in the hospital for a little bit. She ends up getting released or discharged. And she ends up staying with her dad for a few months. And it seemed like he was really stepping up to the plate for Taylor. Like, he was the one person who was like stable for her. You know, at least she had somewhere to go and it was family. But the downside, because there's always a downside, right? A few months later, Arturo, Taylor's dad, he was arrested. Oh, girl, let me tell you, because this is a fucking mess. A mess. He was arrested for raping a 13-year-old girl. Not great. So back in 2018, it was like 3 years prior to his arrest, he committed an extremely serious statutory rape with a then 13-year-old who was a relative of his then wife. I don't know if they're his wife. Yeah. So what the fuck is up with this family? Green Bay, I guess. I don't know. So he ended up pleading no contest and he cut a deal for a second degree sexual assault of a child charge instead of first degree. Yay. I don't know. Anyway, he was sentenced to 12 years and sent to prison. I know. Jesus. We don't know the dynamic of this family. Let's just say Taylor had no idea her dad was like this at all. It would suck for her to finally have some stability, like her dad in her life again, and then he gets arrested, and then you find out your dad's arrested for statutory rape. That would probably cause another rock bottom, is what I'm thinking. So she's like, great, now my dad's gone. So now Taylor is back on her own. And during this time, she found out that Warren, her husband, had cheated on her yet again. I guess she found out that, you know, while he was in prison, she found out that some infidelity had taken place before he went. Or maybe he cheated on her while he was in prison. Not really clear. But regardless, in January of 2022, Taylor went to her Facebook. Here's the quote. "I got hitched to show them my commitment, loyalty, and dedication to them. That I was never going to be how I used to be. Then they turn around and fuck on me. There's no way I'll ever go into another relationship. Hashtag can't trust no one." Yeah. You tell them, Taylor. You tell them. Hashtag can't trust no one. Not even yourself. In February of 2022, Taylor is at a new low. And she's wanting to get back on the bitch. So she rekindles a friendship with her old high school lover, Shad. Now, at this time, Shad, too, was really into meth, so they had a lot in common, and he could also get it for her. And in February of 2022, they got back in touch through a mutual friend, which led to Taylor and Shad spending most of their time together just doing drugs and having sex, because that's what they did on meth. While her husband is in jail, she's like, I need my own buddy.
So on the night of February 22nd, Taylor and a friend are looking to party. So the both of them, they jump into Taylor's roommate's minivan and they go pick up Shad. And he's at his house where he lives with his mom, Tara, and her boyfriend, Steve. So they pick him up and they're driving and they make a pit stop to get some drugs. They pick up meth, weed, and trazodone, crowd favorites I hear. And they go back to Taylor's apartment to shoot the shit, smoke some weed, do some drugs. At this point, you know, I guess, I don't really know, I wasn't there, but allegedly everyone was having a great time. Taylor and Shad, they want a little bit more. You know, they really want to get the party started. So that's when they break out like the meth and they start doing the higher stuff. But the high, I guess when it gets too intense, that's when they take the trazodone to like mellow it out. So they're going up, they're going down, they're going up, they're going down, they're going down, they're going down, they're going up. They're just all over the place. Well, at some point, their friend, I guess, is a little party pooper and decides to leave Shad and Taylor to themselves, decides to go home, right? Shad and Taylor, they hang out at her apartment for a few more hours. They're waiting for their drugs to come down. And at that point, I guess they're out of meth. So they decide, let's go get more. They're pretty much all day on just a drug binge. So they leave Taylor's place, they go pick up more meth, and then this time they head back to Shad's house where he lives with his mom. And they go inside and they head straight down to the basement because the basement is where like is the hangout spot, right? You get it, hangout spot. By the time they make it back to Shad's place, it's already late. Like it's early in the morning, depending on who you ask, you know? But all Taylor knows is that she is on a good one. So they're down there just doing drugs. She passes Shad the glass pipe loaded with the bitch because he wants to be on her level. They settle in for no more than 5 minutes. And at this point, Shad pulls out and shows Taylor 2 silver chain link necklaces. I know I was thinking like Hot Topic, like necklace type of deal, but it's not. It's a dog choke collar. And he's like suggesting that they use it while they're having sexual intercourse. And she's like, yeah, I'm into that. It was her thing. It was their thing. They both liked it. So they're both into this kink, being choked, you know? And they had done it before consensually, which is always important, right? Consent. Taylor and Shad are no strangers to this, you know? They were like really into it, allegedly. But this time, Shad, I guess, really wanted to kick it up a notch and use the chains. And like, I guess Taylor was just so down for it. She's like, what? Yeah, let's do it. So just a disclaimer, the following of what I'm going to say is what Taylor said during her confession. So it's very one-sided, okay? And when she was giving her confession, she was high. So a lot of it is kind of wacky and whatever. So, but this is the information we have, okay? So it's not me saying these things. This was according to Taylor. So Taylor said that Shad had the chains around his neck and he laid face down on the bed. Taylor said that she gets on top of him as if like she's going to ride a horse. And she begins to pull on the loose end of the chain. She said as she was pulling on the chain, she like watched Shad and she sees his face turn from red to purple. And then she notices him kind of going in and out of consciousness. Taylor would say during her high, it was cool because she was like, wow, I can like change his face color. So she keeps applying pressure on the chain, trying to make him go from red to purple to blue to whatever. And she tells police officers during her confession that because she was high, she wanted to make him small. Like when she choked him, he got smaller. I don't know. But according to her, again, because she's high, she was choking him and it was appearing that his neck was rebuilding muscle. So because of this, she was getting more and more frustrated and she was pulling harder and harder on the chain. She said at one point, Shad, he like coughs up blood. And she said that she could feel his heartbeat like kind of really slow down and come to a halt. And that somehow excited her even more. So she pulls even harder. At this point, she said she was in full ecstasy and she knew Shad was dead according to his face because he was purple and he had blood coming out of his mouth. So she knew like something wasn't right or he was dead. But that didn't stop her. She keeps going. And the police ask her, why the hell did you keep going if you knew, like, you know, he was dead? And she said, because of curiosity, she wanted to see what would happen.
Yeah, I don't know, girl.
So Taylor, in her words, quote, accidentally fucks up, end quote, and realizes that she had just killed Shad. But she said that she had no remorse in her higher self. It was all about chasing this pleasure feeling, and she was feeling it. So after she's done choking him, she decides to, quote, unquote, play with him. In other words, she takes her sweet time with Shad's lifeless body, and his body is, like, turning her on. In her confession, she said that Shad's lifeless body turned her on so much that she wanted to touch and kiss it and love on it all over.
Yeah, this next part kept me up a little too late at night
because she ends up performing oral sex on his corpse.
A visual I could have done without.
She ends up putting different sex toys. She has sex toys on deck. I'm assuming, I couldn't figure this out, but I'm assuming this is probably where, like, Shad slept, is in this basement. And what's her name? Taylor pulls out some sex toys and she ends up, like, playing with his body and the sex toys and different things to his corpse. She's doing it all. And I don't know what the fuck that, I don't know. Yeah. I was like, what? What, girl? Yeah, she did that. She did it for hours, allegedly, according to her confession. She ends up playing with his corpse for far too long until she gets really tired or her high wears off. Taylor, at this point, when she's playing with the corpse's body, she had been awake for over 24 hours. So after she's done playing with his body, she's like, I'm tired, and decides to take a quick little nap.
Yeah. I don't know, you guys. Like, what?
Huh?
She did that.
She got down to she business, didn't she? Wow. So she takes a nap. So then when she wakes up, she thinks it would be best to take Shad's body with her out of the house. But she knows, like, I can't just, like, carry his body out of the basement by myself and then carry him to the van. So this is when she has a light bulb moment and she decides, oh my God, duh, I could just cut him up into small, manageable pieces and then I can carry him. That's a great idea, Taylor.
Yeah, I know.
Thanks. And this was her plan.
So the first thing I guess Taylor wants to do is she wants his head. According to her, it was like her trophy. She was proud of it. But also, like, she really liked Shad. She wanted his head. It was her favorite part.
So while Shad's family is asleep, Taylor creeps upstairs. She goes to the kitchen. She grabs, like, a handful of knives to take with her downstairs to the basement. So Taylor pulls Shad's body to the edge of the bed. So his head is, like, hanging off of the edge of the bed. And she puts a bucket right underneath him. And she starts experimenting with a few of the knives that she had grabbed from the kitchen. She's trying to sever Shad's head, but none of them were working. So she's getting all frustrated. That is, until she busts out the bread knife. Now, I guess this bread knife, it made it very easy to cut through the skin and muscles. So she loved this knife. She's like, oh, this is the shit. It just starts going to town. She goes at it, and Taylor successfully is able to remove Shad's head. She had this bucket under his head, right? And it was catching, like, all of his blood. So she takes that bucket and she pours all of his fluids down in the shower. There was, like, this janky shower in the basement, but she pours his blood down the shower drain. And then she puts his head in the bucket. The head isn't enough, though. She wants to take all of him home with her, so she continues. She takes that bread knife again, and she cuts off her second favorite thing, his genitals.
Yeah.
So she got the head. Now she wants the genitals. She cuts it off, and she puts his penis and testicles into the bucket and then moves on to the rest of his body. But after this, she needs another nap. So she's like, I'm going to do the rest. I need a nap. Hold on. So she takes another nap. I guess this nap just gives her some new energy because she wakes up and she fucking gets down. And what I mean is, like, it's awful. Because she wakes up. She has energy. I don't know. She manages to cut Shad in half. Long ways.
Yeah.
Not all the way in half, but like opens him up because it. She's able to get inside of his chest, stomach, and pelvic area. And she takes all of his organs out and she puts them in random like plastic Walmart bags. Yeah. And she just starts going to town. She's taking out everything, putting them into bags. I don't know. No one knows what she's doing. She's just doing it. That's when she places Shad's torso into that big blue container. And then Taylor saws Shad's arms off at the elbows and puts it in the storage container. But no matter how many times like she saw the arms off, in her mind, because again, she's high, she tells police that they were growing back. So she's like tripping out, just like panicking and like going to town. She's tripping hard. Taylor keeps at it though, and she cuts off Shad's left foot and puts it in the empty chest. She said she put the foot in the chest for storage because she was gonna move it all, you know? So she's like, yeah, the chest will hold the foot. It was a new one for me. Haven't heard that.
I was like, all right.
I guess at this point, Taylor was just exhausted. She had done a lot of, right? So she slows down a little bit and she starts to dabble with more delicate work. Like she starts to fillet his back and right thigh, cutting off the skin. She cuts it off all the way down to the bone. And I was like, oh no, don't tell me she ate it. She didn't eat it. She didn't, no eating that we know of. She said in the, and during the interview that at some point she had a Jolly Rancher with her and that once she cut off his head and stuff and she put it all in the bucket, she took that Jolly Rancher and she spit it into the bucket. She's like, that's all I ate was a Jolly Rancher and I spit it in the bucket. Okay, girl. All right. Everything seems fine here. Total normal confession happening. I mean, there's a mess and blood everywhere. And the bitch was just making her paranoid. She said she started having more intense hallucinations. She's hearing footsteps. She's hearing gunshots. The room begins to make her very uncomfortable. And on top of that, she's like, there was no door. And it's just scary and dark and eerie. And she wants to be done with all this because she's just really fucking in her head because she's high. So with all this being said, she starts cleaning. She's like, I have to go. We have to get out of here. We have to go. Starts cleaning like crazy, right? She starts off strong. Clean, clean, clean. But then she ultimately gets lazy and starts to half-ass everything. She's like, I don't want to clean anymore. I'm hungry. Where's my Jolly Rancher? Where'd that Jolly Rancher go? She ends up throwing the towel over the bucket with Shad's head in it and penis. And she said that she threw the towel over with the full intention of her, like, taking it home. But she's rushing at this point to get the hell out of there. So she grabs his still intact left foot and leg and forgets all about the bucket. She leaves it behind. Now, this should bring us all the way back to the beginning because we know what happened next. Tara, Shad's mom, finds the head in the bucket and then tells police to go looking for Taylor Shabusiness. I guess Shad's mom said Taylor and Shad had been hanging out in the basement for well over 24 hours before she had found his head. That they had come home late Monday night. They had spent all day. They didn't even come out of the basement Tuesday. And they were just doing their thing down there. And Shad's mom said, you know, they're old enough to like hang out. And also, I didn't want to walk in just randomly down in the basement and accidentally see them having sex or something. Like that was her reasoning as to why she didn't go down there and check. I could see that, but, you know, okay, sure. So with this information, police dispatch a unit of police officers to Taylor's apartment to locate the minivan that she was driving the night of Shad's death. And they end up finding this minivan at Taylor's apartment complex. They get her address. They go right to her apartment complex. There's the van. The officers, they didn't even need to, like, shine their flashlights into the van because as they approached the vehicle, the van, like the lights turned on by themselves as if someone was either locking or like unlocking the door with a remote. So they're like, okay, weird. So the police officers are looking inside the window of the van and they can see like a basket full of what seemed to be dirty laundry. And on top of the laundry was a crock pot box. So no crock pot, but like the box it came in. So the officers, they turn their attention to the outside of the car and they're looking around and they could see that there are a few droplets of blood. So they look and they see that there are footprints because it's snowing. mind you. So they see blood in the snow, and they also see footprints leading them straight to the apartment building that this person walked to with some blood, you know, following them. It was like, they didn't have to try that hard. It led them right to her. So they start heading to the building, but before they get there, Taylor just walks right out. Maybe that's why the light of the van was on. Like, maybe she was coming back to grab something or maybe leave, but she comes right out. So they stop her. This is all on, like, body cam footage, too. And, like, the second Taylor sees the police officer, she, like, stops dead in her tracks. What's the saying? But she doesn't try to run or, like, get away. She just stops and just kind of, like, smiling because she's weird. So the police officers, they approach her. They see that she's wearing, like, she's wearing all black. She's got on a black hoodie, black sweatpants. And when they look more closely, they can see that the sweatpants were caked in what clearly looked like dried blood. Then they take a look at her hands and they can see, like, also stained with blood. And on top of that, one thing Detective Bailey noticed was that she had on a full face of makeup. She even had a lash on. I know. I was like, what is this girl doing? Who puts on a lash to murder someone? Or did she put on the lash after the fact so she could get a nice mugshot? But she had a full beat on. I was like, okay, girl, whatever. Her priorities are a little fucked up. So, of course, placed under arrest, right? They search her van. They look inside the van, and inside that crock pot box, that's where they find Shad's leg and foot. And at this moment, that's when they realize that they've got their killer. So they take Taylor to the police station, where obviously they get all their photographs that they need, like her blood-stained hands, her bloody clothes, the rest of her body. After they're done taking the pictures, they give her, you know, that jumpsuit, the orange jumpsuit that they make all criminals wear. And then they leave her alone in the interrogation room, where they catch her on camera saying, like, I fucking hate this outfit. That part made me laugh because I feel like maybe her concerns seem a little misplaced. But she really fucking hates this outfit. I'm like, girl, you murdered someone. So I don't think the outfit is really what you should worry about, but I don't know. So she's being interrogated by a detective named Graff. And he's asking her all types of questions where she tells him that Shad was her ex-boyfriend / fuck buddy. They let her know that they found a lot of blood and Shad's head in a bucket in his mother's basement. To which Taylor responded, quote, that is pretty fucked up. So when I was watching this, I was like, what the fuck is going on right now? What the fuck is going on right now? I could not wrap my head around her confession. While the detective Graff asked Taylor more questions about Shad and, like, what she did back at the house, it suddenly dawned on her that she had totally forgotten about Shad's head. And then all of a sudden, like, during questioning, she bursts out, like, this is a quote, damn, the head! I can't believe I left the head, though! I'm sure they got the right chick, you know? So detectives ask her the one question that we all want to know, why? Why did you kill Shad? What happened? You know, why did you do it? And her response to them was, quote, good question, because I blacked out during that time, but I need to think, end quote. I know. I feel like killers, they always love a good, like, blackout moment in their story. They always black out, but then they seem to remember everything. It's so funny, isn't it? They love a blackout. Detectives ask her, okay, well, do you think the whole body's still there? And then she answers to them, like, I don't see why not, unless I just, like, left it, which I could have. Then they ask Taylor how she felt when she strangled him. And she tells them in, like, a really lower, creepy tone, I liked it. It was very exciting. Everything was. You should check my panties. End quote. Not kidding. She said that. This is not okay. This is not okay. I'm not kidding. She said that. Check my panties. No, girl, no. No. Girl, what are you doing? It gets worse. Like, if you think this is bad, it just keeps getting worse and worse. The detectives ask her, like, did Shad try to fight back? And she was like, yeah, he did, but I won. When they get to Shad's dismemberment, they ask her if it took her all day. And she tells them, like, yeah, it did. And they question if she had taken any other drugs during that time. And then Taylor answers, no, she didn't, but I should have. They asked her how she dismembered Shad's body. And she goes into very great detail and tells them about the knives in the kitchen and that her favorite was the bread knife. I got a snack really quick because I'm hungry. I haven't eaten yet. Okay, so then dismemberment, really. Okay. Towards the end of Taylor's interrogation, that's when she starts to, like, she's coming down or off of her drugs, maybe, because that's when she's starting to, like, apologize. She's telling detectives that she didn't mean for all this to happen, that she fucked up, and that she was sorry. And it's like, yeah, girl, that's what you did. Okay. But it's too late. She already gave her full confession. DNA everywhere. Girl, you're getting charged. You fucking killed someone brutally. Like, what are you doing? You can't just say sorry and it's all okay. Don't be dumb. I think it's safe to say that meth really kind of ruined Taylor's brain, right? After her arrest, authorities had a really hard time deciding if she was mentally healthy enough to even stand trial. Taylor was assigned a lawyer, and their name was Quinn Jolly. Don't get me started on these names, okay? Quinn Jolly. Quinn Jolly, weirdly enough, also represented her dad in his sexual assault case. So it was like a BOGO. So they end up going to her court hearing where the judge would determine if they could delay Taylor's trial to like get an expert to evaluate her, because they submitted a plea of not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. Which is kind of valid, right? But not really. It's not. Let me tell you why. Now, I don't know if you guys saw this, but I saw this shit. So I was watching the court trial. I was like, what? I could not believe the story. I just could not believe it. I thought it was fake. And then I also thought, like, the whole court trial was like, did you guys watch Jury Duty? I thought it was like that. And it wasn't. It was real. Because, okay, look, they go to a hearing, right? Taylor ends up losing her shit at this hearing. So she's sitting right next to her lawyer, Mr. Jolly or whatever the fuck. And the judge is kind of like having a hard time approving a short delay of the trial, trying to determine, right? And then out of nowhere, Taylor, who was handcuffed by chains at the waist in her orange jumper, she all of a sudden, out of nowhere, jumps up and leads with her elbow to like punch her lawyer. She gets up, she tries to smack. She full on attacks her lawyer. It's not funny, but I was like, I've never seen this before in a courtroom. Wow. Takes him down pretty much to the ground. The deputies in the courtroom, they were like slow. Like, where were they? I don't know. It was a hot mess. They wrestled Taylor to the ground and they end up clearing the court before continuing with the hearing. It was wild. So many were kind of like, if she wanted to show the judge that she was mentally incompetent, like this is how she would do it. Some really thought that she was kind of just leaning into this in hopes for the judge to see that she is mentally unwell. And that was kind of like the debate for a minute. But then as you continue watching the court trial, I just think this is who she is as a person. After that whole ordeal, she was assigned another public defender. Fair. Taylor, she went and got evaluated in February by a state psychologist to see like if she could take the stand, right? Is she fit? Well, this one psychologist came back and said, no, like Taylor is not mentally fit to stand trial. She can't. The psychologist told the court that during one of her evaluations with Taylor, Taylor had freaked out, got up out of her seat and started screaming. Then she took herself to the corner of the room and picked up a chair, which luckily was a plastic chair, and hawked that shit at the psychologist. The psychologist said that in their 32 years of practice, no one has ever thrown a chair at her. But despite this, the judge ruled that Taylor was competent to stand trial. It's a very hot take. Taylor's trial started earlier this year, July of 2023. Do not recommend. I watch a lot of court trials. I want to work in a courtroom one day, so I'm always watching. But this court trial was nothing like I've ever seen before. At the beginning, Taylor's new lawyer asked the court to exclude Taylor's internet search history before the murder took place, because this happened before the murder took place. It had nothing to do with what happened, right? And the reason that they wanted her internet search history to not be shown was because she was making some questionable searches. In court, they had read them and it was like, oh my fucking girl. She was looking up Jeffrey Dahmer, walking into court all sexy. There was another one, Jeffrey Dahmer's butt. It was like when a kid first gets the internet. The judge ended up ruling that the evidence could be admitted to court. So we have a little Jeffrey Dahmer lover over here, and I don't get it. There's so many fish in the sea. Why Jeffrey Dahmer? The witness stand during trial was a freaking hot mess. They called to the stand a friend who was, or the friend who was with them the night of Shad's murder. Remember, the friend who was the party pooper and left? So they call up this friend to the stand and they ask him if he noticed anything weird with Taylor's behavior that night. And he said, no, the vibes were chill. Another person who was called to the stand was Taylor's father, Arturo. Let me tell you, they bring him into court. He's in his orange jumpsuit. He's also handcuffed because he's serving his sexual assault sentence situation, his rape. He ends up taking the stand. He tells the court that Taylor's mental health had been declining ever since her mom died. And then he goes on to blame Taylor's husband, Warren, saying that everything was fine until he got out of jail and fucked everything up. You know, he introduced his daughter to these drugs and she got involved and he fucked her up. So he's done with his testimony. They're walking him out of the courtroom and Taylor's sitting there. She's looking at her dad. She's like, I love you. And then he's like, I love you too. They're talking to each other, which they're not supposed to. And then after they walk him out of the courtroom, Taylor yells, go Bears. Honey, now's not the time. No. I was like, girl. Go Bears at a murder trial? I mean, if you watch the trial, which you shouldn't because I'm giving you the whole rundown, but you can tell, or she seems, Taylor, seems very mentally unwell. Every time someone's on the stand, she's looking straight at the court cameras and she's just staring at them. And then she's laughing. She's giggling all throughout. She can't stop laughing. Girl, you murdered someone. What is your problem? Get it together. She's just always making some kind of face like somebody farted, you know? But in court, I guess, mental illness brought on by drugs or a mental illness that seems to be extreme because of drugs is not considered a quote unquote true mental illness because of the drugs. So if you kill someone while high, you're liable. And that's why she was able to go to the whole trial. After the whole trial, the jury only took 1 hour to find Taylor Shabusiness guilty on all charges. First degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, third degree sexual assault, and she was facing mandatory life in jail, as she should, because what the fuck? Remember Taylor Shabusiness' husband, Warren Shabau? Well, since her arrest, he really stepped up his husband game. He's still in federal prison serving his sentence, but I guess they get access to Facebook in prison. I didn't look this up. I forgot to. Throughout the trial, Warren used Facebook to voice his support for his wife. Like, no matter what she did, he was posting like, I'm so blessed to be with Taylor. My wife is locked up, but like, I love her regardless. She is my ride or die, blah, blah, blah. He would go on and on like, she would never do this. She was just having a bad day. He was like, boy, shut up. Everyone just needs to shut up. She and Warren are still in communications often, at least. I don't know about right this second, but when I was researching all this, like they were writing letters to each other. She was directing him on like what to post on his Facebook saying like, honey, you need to like post that I'm innocent. And that you're standing by me or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But that's mainly it. I think they're still married. Well, Taylor will be spending the rest of her life in prison for murdering Shad, as she should be, because it was brutal. I guess today's story really stuck out for me personally. Like, it really was like, what the fuck? I could not wrap my head around it because of, well, obviously how brutal it is. I think we can all agree that it was very brutal. And I guess I was really shocked because you don't hear these types of stories a lot when it comes to women killing, right? Like, this is such mainly a man thing, not to be sexist or anything, right? But I think we can agree in these true crime stories, it's always the men who go off like this. Rarely is it a woman. And for the first time, I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, she went off. And yeah, probably because of the meth, but still, I was like, holy fuck. Never have I ever heard a horrifying story like this. And drugs are bad, and I'm glad it wasn't used as an excuse for her to get, like, a lesser sentence, because she shouldn't get a lesser sentence. Shad's life was lost because of this woman, and Shad's mom forever traumatized, right? It's just sad. I didn't want to look up, like, where Taylor's kid or baby is at, because none of that matters, right? And I don't think we need to know, but what the fuck was that about? I don't know. Go Bears. Need I say more? Obviously, she's not mentally well. I think we can all agree on that. But you still murdered someone. And you didn't even just murder a girl. Like, you fucking chopped up. And that's a different type of brain that I don't ever want to encounter. And yes, you have to be in jail for a long time, Taylor. Pay for what you did, girl. Sorry. But go Bears. Anyways, I hope you have a good rest of your day. Please be safe out there. Make good choices. And yeah, I hope you have a good rest of your week. I'll be seeing you guys later. Goodbye.